It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent rodhunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
Good evening. This is Bob Siegel. How are you doing on this slow news week? We always have to call the news slow when Mike Friedenberg comes on. Say hello to columnist Mike Friedenberg.
So, Bob, yep, and I don't know what it is. I mean, every other week you're on or you have other guests on, and it's not a slow news week, but when I come on, it always is.
There's never anything happening when I bring
you
on.
No, I had to really dig hard to come up with some stuff for today's show.
Yes, I'll bet you did.
I did, but I have come up with a few things. So I thought we might start off talking about the Save America Act.
Yes. In as much as the Republicans are being spineless, and I don't think there's any way it's going to pass, even though it could if they wanted it to.
Well, I watched Maria Bartiromo, Sunday Morning Futures, this morning. I really like, I watch her show every
day. Yeah, she's good.
She's good. And she had Mike Lee on, Senator Mike Lee, and he's one of the co-sponsors of the Save America Act. And he basically assured us that it's going to pass because they're going to debate it for a few weeks. And they've only got a 10-vote gap to make up. And in 1964, there was a bill that had to achieve cloture, and it started off with a 32-vote gap, and they managed to get it done. Suffice it to say,
their debate is not, just for the clarity of our audience, the debate they're having right now is not the talking filibuster.
No.
If they do the talking filibuster, every person can only talk twice, and they can take as long as they want. Yeah. But my understanding is that they're not allowed to take bathroom breaks or stop and come back the next day, although I'm sure there have been times when they've done it that way. And it could go on almost forever, but it would eventually stop. The problem is we don't have the Republican votes, which would be a simple 50-vote majority because the tiebreaker would be our vice president. We don't have enough Republicans to vote to get rid of the filibuster.
Not even close.
Vote to do the talking filibuster.
Not even close.
With people like Lisa Murkowski and Mitch McConnell, who should have retired about 25 years ago.
Yeah, well, it is, his protege was John Thune, Senator Thune. We got the Big Beautiful Bill through, which was very good.
Yeah, give credit where credit is due.
And that is a budgetary-oriented bill by reconciliation, but a bill like the Save America Act cannot get through on reconciliation.
If the Democrats retake Congress, they will get rid of the filibuster. And you know whose fault it will be? The Republicans. Let's make no mistake about that. I always vote Republican. And I said this last week, and I've said it many times. The Democrats are the abusive husband. The Republicans are the enabling wife. And if you study domestic abuse, the enabling wife is just as dangerous as the abusive husband.
I think that's one of the dynamics. The other dynamic is that if they get rid of the filibuster, then there's all sorts of legislation that's pent up that then they will have
that
no
they know as Republicans are expected to pass,
expected
and
to
some
pass
of them
and they don't want to pass it.
And why don't they want to pass it? Well, that's an interesting
question. Well, I mean, well,
give me an example of something that they would know as Republicans they'd be expected to pass, but they wouldn't really want to pass.
Well, one of the things that is sitting out there is getting rid of the Department of Education.
Didn't Trump already try to do that by executive order? And then a judge overturned it, I believe.
Well, he's basically, he can't do it, but he can basically neuter its ability to do a lot of stuff.
Right.
However, you know, you still have it there when somebody comes back, and then they immediately hire another 50,000 people to restock it or whatever the number is.
And I should say, if some of those things do pass, judges will I guarantee you, if the SAVE Act does pass, and I don't think it will. I wish it would.
See, for example.
But even if it did pass, I guarantee you some judge would just overturn it a week later.
So like ending Common Core and expanding school choice, that's another piece of legislation. One of the things, and I've said this over the years, when Trump started running in 2016, he was on that stage with 17 candidates. There was only one candidate that mentioned China and trade policy. That was Trump. Now, at the time, I wasn't supporting him, but my ears perked up because for decades, I thought we had an absolute crazy, a stupid, and literally a traitorous trade policy.
And by the way, he's on record saying things about Iran, too, as far back as the 1980s. So all this talk about how he's just doing this because of Netanyahu. Here's one guy who's been consistent from the beginning, whereas Democrats will spend years trying to explain why 5 years ago they didn't really say what you heard them say, and you could still go to YouTube and continue to hear them say.
So prior to 2016, all the Democrats were supporting, including people like Ted Cruz, the status quo on our trade policy with China.
And Trump really came in and moved the needle.
And he moved the needle on that. But there's a lot of people that were getting a lot of money from big donors, donors that had made millions and billions of dollars by sending our blue-collar jobs over to China. And remember that in that period of time, the blue-collar job workers had not seen any gains in wages for decades because of the loss of revenue to, you know, China's predatory trade policy. It wasn't fair trade. It was not free trade. It wasn't even close to free trade. Yet they used that fake debate. Oh, we believe in free trade when it wasn't. So I also believe that's a key issue because they also want to instantiate and, or, you know, put into law some of the stuff on the trade stuff too, which I think there's a lot of senators that don't want that. So I think really what it comes down to is maybe they would be okay with the Save America Act, but then they think of all the other bills they'll be under pressure to pass. Well, the filibuster's gone, so now here's some legislation. But like you said, if the Democrats were to get back like they had with Biden for 2 years, if they have the presidency, they've got the Congress, and they've got the Senate, then it will be a picosecond, which is, you know, a trillionth of a second
before they get rid of the filibuster. Yeah, and then they're going to make Puerto Rico a state and Washington, D.C. a state so that Republicans can never gain back the Senate. They're going to stack the Supreme Court with unlimited justices and make sure they're all Democrats so that the Constitution can be interpreted fairly and objectively.
So the arguments about the collegial atmosphere and, gosh, if we do this, what will Democrats, won't they do the same to us when they get? We already know what they did. It was Kyrsten Sinema and Manchin that stopped it the last time around. And they're not there anymore. If those senators had voted with the Democrats when Biden was in office, the filibuster would be gone. The Democrats have already shown it. So there's, I mean, anyway, we know that. So I do just want to say is right now I hold the Senate Republicans responsible for not passing the Save America Act. It's not the Democrats, it's the Republicans.
And who's responsible for not funding DHS?
It is the same people.
The Republicans, they could get rid of the filibuster for that too. They could also, I understand, do that through reconciliation.
They
won't even do that.
No.
They won't even do reconciliation.
Well, because if you start a reconciliation bill, Trump will probably put stuff into it that they don't like. That's very popular with the people.
Well, I do agree that when a bill goes through, it should be a clean bill. I don't like it when they put ornaments on it because, even with the Save America Act, they went and put in the transgender stuff. I am completely for getting men out of women's sports, and I want to see a bill that does that. Should that really be the same bill as the Voting Acts bill? I just don't think that was a good idea. However, let's be honest, the Democrats were not going to pass the Save America Act, even if it was just about voting.
That one confused me because actually President Trump I didn't believe when I first heard it. I said, certainly Trump wouldn't do that, but he was the one who pushed to have that amendment. And I don't understand why.
Yeah. Well, again, I don't think the Democrats would go along with that anyway. They don't want voter ID. They don't want ICE. And there's a theme behind both of those. They want illegal people in the country because such people vote for them and keep them in power. It's just that simple. It's not because they're compassionate. It's not because they have big hearts. They're a bunch of vile, foul-mouthed politicians.
So another thing that they wouldn't want passed is that H.R. 23, it would be putting sanctions on the International Criminal Court if they go after U.S. citizens. And the International Criminal Court is just, we should get rid of that thing. We don't abide by it.
We don't abide by it, but we do need to protect our citizens abroad. For example, Mondami has said that if Netanyahu comes to New York City, he's going to arrest him.
Right. So anyway, so there's just, that is my view. My view is that they don't want to get rid of the filibuster because they don't want to vote for a lot of stuff. Now, if you have...
So you don't think it's that tired argument if it's time-honored and
no,
it's convenient while we have it and we wouldn't want the Democrats to... You think there's really ulterior motives for them not wanting to get
Bob,
rid of
how
it.
Could it be that way? Because I'm going to say this bluntly. To make that argument in this day and age, with all the evidence we have before us, you have to be a complete and utter idiot.
Not only could we easily imagine that the Democrats would get rid of it, they have come out and told us they would.
Well, they did it.
Just like Iran told us for years they wanted to kill us. Why don't we let evil people speak for themselves and believe what they say?
Under the Biden administration, they put it up to get rid of the filibuster. The only reason they did not get rid of the filibuster is because Sinema and Manchin defected. So there's your evidence. Sinema and Manchin are gone.
Speaking of the occasional good Democratic senator, I'm a little confused by Fetterman because he's really been speaking out about funding Homeland Security, and he's really been diverging from his Democrat peers and challenging them. But he's not voting to go along with the Save America Act, and that confuses me a little
bit.
He
said in the current form, I don't know what that means.
It may be because he didn't want to see it stuck together with the guys in girls' sports.
Well, and that amendment's already been voted down. So it's not there anymore.
Oh, because the last I heard, they were still... I've heard Republicans, even on today's news shows, talking about how that's still in there.
Okay, you know what? I could be wrong. I thought that was voted down. But anyway, regardless, the only thing I could think of is that some people trying to be too clever. Like, hey, we defeated the transgender amendment, and we feel sort of a victory there. So maybe we're more likely to vote for the core bill. I don't know what kind of weird psychology they could think of, but I can't think of a reason why you would do that. Because it just, my first gut reaction, in fact, I was watching the show with my son when the guy and, you know, they're talking about it going, we both looked at each other and thought, this is one of the dumbest things we've heard, is putting that amendment on the Save America Act.
It never made, and again, I like, it's two separate bills. I'm 100% yes. in favor of both of them. I don't understand what they're doing in the same
bill. No, it's classic muddying the water. So anyway, I think that's enough on that. So the other thing that's happening in the news is that you probably heard that there's this conflict going on in the Middle East.
Oh, yeah, somewhere in the country that used to be called Persia, somewhere right. in that area.
So, you know, before we get into this, like, there's sort of a bigger environment around here. There's been this, a lot of infighting right now, and fighting in, you know, what a lot of people characterize as the conservatives movement on Israel. You know, the Israel question, and some people are, you know, really extreme.
There's an awful lot of anti-Semitism that's developing on the right amongst conservatives.
There is
and
some
it
of
bothers
that.
Me quite a bit.
There is some of that. I will also say, though, people like Mark Levin and Ben Shapiro, they come out so hard against any, not like what Tucker Carlson is doing, but anybody that disagrees with anything on Israel, it is a turnoff for people. It's like they actually almost push people to go the other direction. They, you know, they've gone overboard on that.
Well, and we made this distinction a few weeks ago. The question came up, can one criticize the nation of Israel without being an anti-Semite? The answer is yes, but it's a careful yes. Obviously, if you criticize something that Netanyahu or the Israeli government is doing here and there, that's not automatic anti-Semitism. But most of today's criticism of Israel challenges its right to exist, calls it an occupier, says it's stolen. There's this historical narrative that's a downright lie. And lies about the Jews historically have been part of the definition of anti-Semitism.
Even if you've been duped into believing the lies about Israel, if you're repeating them, you're still being anti-Semitic.
Well, and I can understand someone getting deceived, but if the truth is pointed out to them and they don't take the time to research it and look it up and challenge themselves, right. that's a problem. And then they're responsible.
So I'm unapologetically pro-Israel. I've been pro-Israel all my life. I know that there's other countries in the world that could use our support. But the thing is, we can't support every country. And just because we can't support every other country doesn't mean we don't, you know, maybe have a country that's a favorite country.
And well, it's the only democracy in the Middle East.
And it has been our favorite country since it came into existence, since 1948.
47, 48.
Okay. And $360 billion in aid since then. So they're the number one recipient of foreign aid in that period of time of all the countries. I have no problem with that. I mean, here's how I look at it. You know, every couple of years, we waste more than that money with grotesquely wasteful defense spending that is just completely ineffective and a waste of money. We do that every couple of years, that amount of money. So I do believe that we can support Israel. They are the only democracy there. They're a liberal Western democracy. They truly are a democracy. So I think they're worth supporting. But at the same time, I'll be honest, Netanyahu is not an America first guy. Netanyahu is an Israel first guy.
Well, as well he should. He's
well,
the premier of Israel. Now, I do want to say this. I do think that there are conservatives. I don't know how much farther they go with their dislike of Israel. But the big criticism that you're hearing is that Netanyahu got Trump into this war. And that just strains credulity to believe that anybody could make Donald Trump do something that he doesn't want to do. And you add to that that we have records of Trump back in the 1980s criticizing Iran. Netanyahu wasn't even the prime minister back then. Oh, he has been prime minister several times, but I don't believe he was prime minister back when Trump was making those speeches. He's been around a while, but he had nothing to do with those speeches Trump was making back then.
No, I am concerned about the war. I don't know how it's going to end up. I really do hope. Listen, okay.
You agree that it was a war worth fighting, though. Your concerns are about perhaps how it's being executed. Can we win?
Well, other than China, compared to China, Iran hardly has killed almost
nobody. I agree that China's the biggest enemy, but the most immediate threat, I think, was Iran.
I'm just saying, if you over the years, it's, you know, 1,500, a couple thousand Americans have been killed, both through the proxies, the attack on the barracks in 1983.
But when people say that there was no imminent threat, the phrase imminence become popular with the Democrats, just like the word existential. You notice a Democrat can't give a speech without using the word existential anymore. It's the word of the day. But here's the thing. China's a very dangerous enemy, maybe even more dangerous, but the Chinese government at least has a desire to survive. With Iranian Islamic philosophy, where if you die as a martyr, you're going to wake up to 70 virgins, there's no reasoning with people like that.
Is it 70 or 72?
I thought it was 70. By the way, have you heard the joke about the Muslim who died and he woke up and first George Washington punched him in the mouth, and then he met the resurrected Thomas Jefferson and he punched him in the mouth, and then he met the resurrected Robert E. Lee and he punched him in the mouth, and he said, "Wait a minute, where are the 70 virgins?" They said, "You misunderstood. It was 70 Virginians."
That's good. So I am concerned about the war for a number of reasons. And it's because I look at a lot of details. For example, we went into that war, in my opinion, not enough anti-missile interceptors and other air defense missiles. I think we underestimated how
many. Well, we're feeling really good about Israel's Iron Dome and also some of the Iron Domes that we have.
Some of the THAAD, the Arrow, things of that nature, some of the anti-missile. But we don't have very many of them. We don't have enough of those interceptors.
So. And I know we've talked before, you're particularly concerned about the drones. Okay, hold that thought, Mike. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric, Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Say hello again to Mike Greenberg.
So I do want to revisit the business with the unfair criticism of Israel. But if you look at the United Nations since 1948, they've had about 700, between 700 and 800 resolutions against
Israel. With very few of ever against Iran or Syria.
Oh, yeah. But some against Syria, but against Iran, no, not very little. And, you know, in the last decade, it's more resolutions condemning Israel have been filed in the UN than all the other countries in the world combined. And then you take a look at the distortion on the whole Palestinian thing, the Gaza thing. So I'm going to say that the savage and unfair criticism that Israel gets nonstop in the world media, I could understand coming from, you know, somebody who's very involved with Israel, like, say, Mark Levin or Ben Shapiro, how you could become just like a little bit, I just don't want to hear it anymore. Plus, if everybody else is trashing Israel, why do you have to get in and trash them as well? I mean, I felt that same way about Trump. There's some things I don't like at what Trump does, but I kind of say, you know what? 20 other people are going to come out and criticize him anyway, so why do I have to criticize him?
Well, just to be fair, I'm a Jewish Christian, and Jews are considered natural citizens of Israel. Automatic citizens. I would not be for being a Jewish Christian. So that's a criticism I'll make of the Israeli government a little bit.
Fair enough.
But the anti-Zionist people are the ones that drive me berserk.
So getting back to this war, we had the 12-day war back in June of 2005, I believe, right? That's when, I think, 2025, excuse me. And the war ended, and it was a mutual ceasefire. Unconditional. No conditions on the ceasefire. Both parties agreed to it. And the reason they agreed to it is both parties were getting hit really hard. Israel was getting hit by missiles from Iran, and Iran was getting hit by Israel really bad. So they both agreed. And one of the things they discovered is that was very alarming is that we had depleted our defensive missiles, or anti-missile missiles, tremendously in that period of time. And we had Arleigh Burke-class destroyers firing off lots and lots of missiles in defense of Israel during that period of time as well, along with Israel's missiles and everything like that. So now we get into this war, an all-out war with Iran, and I'm asking myself, why? Why would we do this when we know that we don't really have enough defensive missiles?
Were they assuming Iran had less than they're appearing to have?
No, that's a possibility, but they knew that Iran had about 3,000 ballistic missiles.
Well, I know they expressed surprise at the long-range missile that went
into
the
Indiana. Well, the ones that Diego Garcia?
Yeah.
Yeah, the ones that tried to hit 4,000
kilometers. That seemed to be a surprise to them.
Yeah, there was a surprise on that. My theory, and this is just a theory, I don't have like a secret deep throat contact in the Pentagon or something like that, and it's something that the Trump administration, and no administration would announce, but especially not the Trump administration, I believe that they got really, really, really concerned about how close Iran was to having a nuclear weapon. Imagine, after we've announced we've obliterated Iran's nuclear program, we don't want to come back and say, and they've sort of gone back and forth, that's the reason we're there. No, that's not the reason there. It's the ballistic missiles. There's all sorts of reasons. So I think that's why we did a very risky decision.
Well, I understand that in the last negotiations, the Iranian ambassador was bragging that they were enriching their uranium again and were very close. I understood that was our reason.
That's what Steve Witkoff said. He said that they had
enough. And Marco Rubio, too.
Yes, both of them said that they were at 60% enrichment, and the experts say that you could take that to 90% enrichment in a few weeks.
And they would use it in a heartbeat. So.
Except that that's not a bomb. You still have to have the actual physical
bomb. Well, yes,
bomb.
But they're still bragging about that program.
Right. Well, they are. So.
And let's be honest, they declared war on the United States 47 years ago.
No, I understand that. However, we're going into the situation here right now is if we did not believe they were close to getting the bomb, let's say, then we might have waited a bit longer until we had built up more reserves of defensive missiles. That's my point.
And you don't believe them when they say they do think they were close again to getting the bomb?
No, my point is that it's very possible that's the reason we went in when we did. It's because we were concerned about it. In other words, rather than waiting, we're short on anti-missile missiles. Right now, as we speak, Israel's running out of missiles to defend itself.
So because we're concerned about that, we're going in even though our missile supply is somewhat limited.
If we weren't so concerned about it getting the bomb, we would have waited longer to build up more reserves of defensive missiles.
But then would you agree that they didn't have any choice if they really thought they were developing the bomb quickly?
I think that you have to do something, but then you have to ask yourself, here's
what's
where
the best thing to do?
Because In the history of warfare, rarely does just airstrikes. Airstrikes normally cannot accomplish what they're trying to accomplish.
Well, I understand that the big bad mantra right now is boots on the ground. And just to be honest, I will number myself as one who has said I don't want to see boots on the ground. But I've been thinking about it. And when you look back at the way things were in Iran and the whole boots on the ground thing, I really didn't mind. It started out aerial. I didn't really mind that we went in with boots on the ground and took out Saddam Hussein.
You're talking about Iraq.
Did I say Iran? Yeah, I meant Iraq. Okay. I meant Iraq. Iraq and take out Saddam Hussein. What bothered me is that we then stayed around and tried to turn them into a democracy.
Right.
And so it's the staying. If we were to send in some Marines or do some quick covert military operations, which probably would mean that technically some boots are hitting the ground, I think the word boots on the ground has become kind of a buzz phrase, and I think it's become almost synonymous with protracted 10-year wars. That's what we don't want to see. I mean, I agree with you, especially if they're still not sure where all the nuclear energy is. They're going to sooner or later have to send somebody in on the ground to look at something.
Well, that kind of gets down to it. So the question here is well, you alluded to it earlier. Are the leaders of Iran, are they rational players like China? Are they rational players like Russia? Or even, to some degree, Kim Jong-un, because even though I really don't trust the guy, I think his primary motivation is to survive.
Yeah, exactly. If somebody at least wants to survive, you can deal with them. If they believe they're going to be rewarded in the afterlife for being a bloodthirsty, murderous tyrant, there's no dealing with people like that.
However, they have been doing this for decades, supposedly building nuclear bombs for now decades, you know, in Iran. So. And they haven't done it yet. So I don't know. I mean,
I think there's also something to be said for the fact that Trump was so critical that other administrations kept kicking the can, and he didn't want to kick the can to the next administration.
Right. So,
especially if we get Democrats in there again.
So we get back to the question here is, if you really believe they're that close to nuclear weapons, and you believe that they are not rational actors, and well, but number one, they could be rational actors, but what does a nuclear bomb give Iran? It gives it the ability to beef up its terrorist operations, expand them with a nuclear umbrella protecting it. Let's put it this way, Bob. No way would we have done the attacks we just did with Israel on Iran if they had a nuclear weapon. We would not have done it. We couldn't have done it.
Because they would have launched their nuclear weapon.
Whether or not they would, you just can't risk it. I mean, you can't.
So they want to do it before. So at the time that they are enriching it and they haven't built it yet, that is the time to attack them then, right?
Right. And then the question is, and all the defense, all the experts and analysts say that they haven't done it yet, but they could be wrong because there is a considerable technical effort to actually build the bomb itself. You know, you've got the enriched nuclear uranium, right? You've got to put it in a bomb, and it is not trivial to build that bomb. Now, North Korea accomplished it, and North Korea is, you know, is a fraction.
The billions of dollars that Clinton gave them for the sake of peace.
It's a fraction of the size of Iran. It doesn't have the economy of Iran, and Iran's got plenty of smart people in it. I mean, that's not fool ourselves. So the question then becomes is, if you are that concerned about it, and if it really is that big a threat, then how could you rule out boots on the ground? Gasco's getting a roundabout way.
I agree with you, but would you agree with me that I think when people say boots on the ground, there is almost this secondary definition of a long... We could send boots on the ground and do a covert kind of operation without having to commit ourselves to stay there for 10 years.
Like Venezuela.
Right? Well, yeah, I'm not naive enough to think it would be as easy.
They were on the ground
as,
for a half an hour.
I'm not naive enough to think it'll be a half hour like Venezuela, but still, something quick compared to Afghanistan and Iraq.
Well, if you're serious about removing that threat, you probably have to do that. I do believe that there's a good chance that some of Trump's military advisors...
They may be on their way doing it already, and they right, just we, haven't even told
well,
us.
Why didn't they announce that?
By the way, did you hear his comment when the Japanese reporter asked him why he didn't announce to the world why he was attacking? He says, well, you guys didn't announce to the world that you were attacking Pearl Harbor. That's got to be the funniest thing I ever heard Trump say.
Yeah, that was funny. He is a funny guy. Now, here's the other, the sort of the wild card in this thing that makes me more hopeful about the outcome of this war is that we've never seen anything like this in terms of just how completely penetrated Iran is with Israeli intelligence.
Yes.
It's just insane.
Yes. I think for years the Israelis have known exactly what to do, where to find it, who they are, where to find them, but we've been tying their hands.
I mean, really, it's wild. So can we actually get in there with troops and get the enriched uranium? I don't know if that's going to happen or not. However, I do want to talk about...
And we probably need to try.
I want to talk about another possibility, because this is also something that, you know, I'm becoming... I mean, I have mixed feelings on it, but I have some hope in this area.
What, maybe Elon Musk will just buy Iran? Is
yeah. That- Well, the attacks, successful attacks against all these senior Iranian officials, the Khomeinists, they're all the part of their Khomeinists. They're called the Khomeinists. They're the Khomeinist school of thought of the Shiite religion.
Not to be confused with the communists.
Right, the Khomeinists, as in Khomeini. Right, they're the
As in Khomeini, yes.
Okay, and so they're but the other term for them is the activists. Then you have the quietists brand of the Twelvers. It's the Twelvers, that's the 12th Iman that disappeared and he's going to come back and lead them to victory.
Right,
okay,
right.
So you have the Twelvers and the quietists, and they're very, very much more moderate. The fact is that about 50 to 60% of the country is only nominally Muslim. In other words, they're very secular.
There's people that have been ripe for a revolution for years.
And yeah, so you have the quietest people that aren't very happy with what the Khomeinists are doing. Then you have the 50 to 60% of the people. They say it's 90% Muslim, but a lot of them are basically like more like cultural, nominal Muslims. They're very secular, and they're being ruled over by a minority. Only about 11% of that Shiite population there is the Khomeinist ruling party. Only about 11%. The rest of the people are people that probably aren't too happy about being under... Well, they're not. In fact, the polling shows they're not happy about it. They're sick of it. However, as you and I know, that a committed fanatical group of 11% can dominate a much larger group of people, which is what's been happening. You know, ruthlessly, 11% is... That's still about 9 million people in, you know, a country the size of Iran. But what gives me hope is that a big part of the Islamic supremacist mindset is this, you know, you have Allah's favor. Well, with all these leaders, the supreme leader, you know, Khomeini as opposed to Khomeini.
Yeah,
Khomeini.
Strength is viewed as a sign of whether Allah is there or not.
Getting taken out.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you have this real chance of that credibility has been stretched and maybe shattered. Now, that's among the faithful, you know, the faithful, those people that really do believe in that kind of stuff. But that's been shattered. Then you have these other people out there don't like being there. But in the meantime, of course, they've ramped up the ruthlessness. And they've been rounding up anybody doing mass roundups of potential opponents to the regime. The downside is in the middle of a war, you can sometimes just have the regime just so crushed down that it can't happen then. But like Bosnia and places like that, a year afterwards is when, you know, the person was deposed, right? So you can have that happen. And I'm hoping that that will happen. I mean, they now have Basij, which is the sort of like the equivalent of the brown shirts, of the Nazi brown shirts. There's like 400,000 of them. And they're the ones that do the most brutal repression. You know, they drag people off the streets, all that kind of stuff. Well, Israel is calling up the leaders, these Basij leaders, and also police chiefs in local districts and saying, we know who you are. We know everything about you. And you should be supporting the people. They actually even got a conversation with one of these guys. Said, oh, no. I swear on the Quran, I'm really not against, you know. I mean, so they are rattling. So the psyops aspect of the thing is good as well. So I really am hoping that we can see truly bear fruit, and possibly a regime change. And I believe whoever came into power would be willing to negotiate away their enriched uranium. And they would want to get back more like it was, you know, maybe not exactly, but it was under the Shah in 1979.
Okay, well, you're listening to The Bob Siegel Show, and we will be right back.
Thank you. Bob Siegel not only writes fiction, but nonfiction as well. Over the years, Bob has received wonderful comments about his book on Christian apologetics entitled, I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But... Many have put this book in the hands of their seeking, unbelieving friends, and the book takes it from there. This is because the book has a rhetorical skeptic that argues with Bob about the harder, less frequently discussed questions. As a result, the reader is immediately aware that they are reading from an author who relates to them. The moment they find themselves questioning something they see, their very question appears in the text. Every question in this book was one that was personally put to Bob during his many years of speaking on college campuses. I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But... Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
I'm Dr. David Poole, president of San Diego Christian College. Did you know that SDCC has been training servant leaders since 1970? That's over 50 years of making an impact. Our degree and certificate programs blend academic excellence with a Christian worldview. Whether you're a traditional age college student or a working professional who wants to complete their degree or certificate program, we may be a match for you. Learn more at sdcc.edu. That's sdcc.edu. San Diego Christian College, over 50 years in the making.
So, Mike, you were saying earlier that even though you mostly defend Israel, you were critical about one thing, and I wasn't sure if I caught it. I know from there you kind of went into, did we go into this to stop the nuclear bomb, and we kind of went into this not having enough missiles. Is that where you were critical? I'm not sure I caught what your criticism was.
Okay, I guess I believe the reason we went in when we did, even when we were not as prepared as we could be, is because we thought there was an imminent threat of Iran getting the bomb.
And you still agree, though, that may well. And that's certainly what the Iranians themselves admitted and bragged about.
But remember, what is it
that you're critical of Israel for over that?
I wasn't trying to be critical. I was just trying to point out that if we weren't so concerned about the bomb, it would have been wiser to wait half a year to build up our missiles.
Well, I agree with that. If they didn't have the bomb yet.
I mean,
a decision that the America and Israel both made.
And then the other thing is that it's understandable. Every country does it. I look for alternative sources of media. I don't just get my new media from the Pentagon press briefing or from the ABC News or Fox News. And Israel is getting hammered. Their anti-missile defenses are being penetrated, and they're getting hammered every night. And so the degradation,
the
big claims about degrading.
Yeah, I kept hearing they were degraded down to.
They're
below 90%.
No, and that is wartime.
I mean, 90%
degraded. That is wartime rhetoric. It also, during wartime, you have what's called battle damage.
But we've decimated so many missiles and missile sites and ships. Well, how could they have? Have like a gazillion billion missiles?
If you do a search on YouTube and you look for the open source intelligence, you'll find about 8 actual confirmed videos of sites being destroyed. It's a very small number.
You think the videos we're seeing are not true videos?
I think some of the videos are true. I think we destroyed a lot of sites, but every war you get involved with, and this is the United States no exception, there is always an overestimation of the battle damage.
I understand they want to be upbeat and they want to be optimistic, so we can allow for some of that. But of course,
it happens all the time.
If there's downright lying, that's a problem.
Bob, they lied during Afghanistan. The military flat out lied about what was happening in Afghanistan. That's not long ago. They flat out lied about what was happening in Vietnam. So I'm just saying it's a very important goal. You want to maintain the war, the enthusiasm for it, as much support as you can. So you can also, maybe you can just have a different interpretation. Well, we're not sure if that missile site was taken out, but there's a lot of smoke. And so it probably was taken out.
I should say, though, when Trump said he thought this was only going to last a few weeks, he sounded sincere.
And I'm sure he did because
he's counting on the intelligence he's being
He's also counting on advice from people that I think overestimate the ability of air power to accomplish things. Mm-hmm. The head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Kane, he's an Air Force general.
And I do think air power can do a lot. I'm a little happier with a lot of air power and a lot less soldiers on the ground.
Air power, the deadly combo is when you have air superiority and you have your ground troops. Then you
can
just
go in and do the nitty gritty.
Then you really have the combo there. But just air power itself, you know, is not going to let you hold territory. It's not going to let you know for sure that you destroyed the target.
Yeah, you have to verify things. I agree with that.
And
yeah.
You know, in the past Gulf Wars, we spent billions of dollars on missiles and long range, you know, glide bombs attacking very realistic looking dummies and decoys. And Iran is doing that right now. So some of those targets we hit, we don't know. And I'm just saying, until you can actually be on site or you have like months and months after the war is over, some of these estimates are just going to be overly optimistic. I'm just saying that, you know, regardless. It always happens. Everybody, it's not like the United States is doing something that every other country hasn't done or the United States hasn't done in the past. And then you see that we have press conference saying, we've destroyed 80% of, you know, Iran's launchers. Then we have a huge attack against Israel, you know, for five nights in a row. And they're still hitting our bases all over they're taking out billions of dollars of U.S. equipment, radar equipment, the air defense equipment that's supposed to defend against the missiles from Iran is being destroyed by Iran. So it's not quite as one-sided as the Pentagon press briefing with the Secretary of War, Hegseth, is. With that said, Iran is getting hammered. They're getting hammered. And one of the things that I find very encouraging is we have deployed helicopters and the A-10 Warthog have been deployed to open up the strait, help open up the Strait of Hormuz. One of my favorite planes, in fact, one of my top two favorite planes in the last 40, 50 years is the Warthog. It's an attack plane. It's the one, it's called the Warthog because it's this ugly plane. It has armor on it. It's got a huge gun.
Yeah, I think I saw footage of that on TV.
And it flies low to the ground. It can hide behind sand dunes and ridges. Its 30-millimeter gun is devastating. It carries 16,000 pounds of ordnance. And it now can carry up to 77 rockets on it. Each one can take out a drone or a fast attack craft, and they only cost $25,000 each, which is just dirt cheap for us. That's dirt cheap. They should cost less, I'll say that. But for us, that's so the fact that they felt they could deploy those there is a good sign. So that is really good news. I think the Strait of Hormuz, though, is a tough nut to crack. It's, you know, so narrow, only 20 miles. And
I do think Trump is right about asking NATO to step up to the plate, though, when they're the ones getting the majority of the oil through the strait and not us.
I think it's funny. I mean, the thing is, they're saying it's not their war. Yes, what they meant is they wouldn't have had the guts to take on Iran, and they didn't want to do it. They were just hoping they were basically willing to pour the, you know, be the ostrich with his head in the sand, right? His head in the hole, pretending that Iran wasn't doing it. And so, yeah, so they said, well, it's not our war, right?
And now that most of the war is over, of course we'll help you,
sure. They've been devastated by the loss of oil from Russia. Their economy has been destroyed by the Ukraine war.
Yeah.
Now along comes this. So they better get involved. And Trump just did a tweet. He's basically saying, you know, it really is their, he's basically said it's their job to open up the Strait of Hormuz. But he says that if they're willing to do it, the United States may join them in doing it. I mean, it was kind of like a snarky.
Yeah. And didn't he just give an ultimatum to Iran to open up the Strait of Hormuz in 78 hours?
It was 48 hours.
Or was it 48? Otherwise, he's going to take out their electric grid?
Yeah, said he will initially attack their, and then what they said is, okay, if you do that, we're going to start taking out all the power stations of all the Gulf states around us. That's what their response was.
But if their power goes out, how would they be able to launch their missiles? Don't they?
Well, their missiles all have self-contained power.
Oh, they don't depend on any.
No, they're not. They're independent.
Shows how little I know.
They have generators that now.
Oh, that's true. They would have
now,
generators.
Now, by taking out the grid and taking out their power, they start to affect their manufacturing capacity, along with
and their abilities to communicate with each other and signal when
once
to do
again,
this or that.
Diesel electric generators. They have. Iran is a big, sophisticated military compared to other ones in the world. They have diesel.
But when they have
generator.
To bring a cardboard cutout of the guy that they say is currently the head of Iran.
Oh yeah, well,
something's not going too well for Iran.
Well, no, they have lost a lot of their manufacturing facilities for building these missiles, but not all of them, because some of that stuff is now underground, And, you know, it's so far to ground that literally you would have to build a...
And that's your concern. Without putting soldiers on the ground, we're not going to be able to go underground and verify
it. And the bunker busters can't get to it. The only way you could get a bunker buster that might be able to destroy it is if you built a nuclear one.
You still have to verify that it happened.
Right. And even then, even with a nuclear bunker buster, if they put it 600-700 feet ground underground, even those can't get to it. I mean, so at some point in time, you lose that battle. You do it. So I think the regime change, a lot of times those things happen. You're not sure they're going to happen. And then, as you said, for all we know, there's some very sophisticated operations being planned and executed right now. I mean, the Israeli intelligence has been so extraordinary, they might actually know where that enriched uranium is.
I have a feeling, at least, that they've known a lot more than we think for many, many years.
If you remember Saturday Night Live, this is funny. When we were doing the Gulf Wars, the media would be up there and there'd be like a military spokesperson up there, Schwarzkopf. And it was, so it was after standing for Schwarzkopf. Stormin' Norman Schwarzkopf. And they'd be like, so General Schwarzkopf, if I was the enemy and I wanted to launch a devastating attack on you and kill as many U.S. soldiers as possible, how would you recommend I do it? Like, where is your weaknesses and your defenses? And then they put out their microphone, like, waiting for Schwarzkopf to answer. The conference went on like that. It's like, it was actually reflecting reality, because in the real press conferences, they weren't quite that bad. But they kept asking Schwarzkopf. So you can get that kind of right now, you know, like, hey, we want transparency. But they can't be transparent because they will have to maintain operational security.
I remember Geraldo Rivera used to love to get dope on some pending excursion and map out exactly what's going to happen.
But
I remember they did a thing about Geraldo one time of him at the Trojan War explaining to the people of Troy, the Greeks are going to hide inside this horse. This is how it's going to be done.
But would he do that before the operation?
There was something. I don't remember what it was. I believe it was somewhere in the Middle East. And I think a lot of it was speculation. He probably didn't know what he was talking about. But it did look like he was doing it before the operation, like some kind of plan that they had. And
so it's hard to know what's on, because there's all sorts of mixed signals. Because, you know, a couple of weeks ago, Trump had asked Iran to set up a ceasefire. And Iran said no. Twice Trump asked and they said no. Now he's saying, well, I don't really want a ceasefire anymore, but he did ask for that.
Well, he says once they're obliterated, that's not the time to, of course, they're going to ask for a ceasefire now. So it does depend on where along the way you are.
But now Iran's saying, no, we don't want a ceasefire. When you pay reparations to us, you can get a ceasefire.
I understood that Trump was recently asked by the Iranians to have a ceasefire, and he said he wouldn't do it. I heard this just a couple of days ago.
Okay, and That's interesting.
I'm sure it's changed a lot over the weeks.
Well, so I don't know. We'll see about that, because just a couple of weeks before, Iran told them no. Listen, maybe there's some interpretations there. And there may be people there because they're
well, and Trump's ceasefires would come with conditions. He's not just going to agree to a ceasefire. They've got to agree to certain things.
They would have to agree to it. But so, yes,
I just at the least verifying that they're not developing nuclear energy.
So to wrap it up, what I have been able to glean, you know, is the best I can do with the information that's available. And I do think that there is some hope for a good positive outcome there.
But you think our military is overstating its success?
I think that there's some overstating the successes. I do think it may require boots on the ground to really be sure that it's happened. And I also think that, you know, it's politically speaking, you hate to put it down to politics, but I don't see this as a 100% big winner for us going into the midterms.
Probably not, but you've got to admire somebody who was willing to put politics aside. Again, I would say if boots on the ground doesn't mean a long time embedded for years, then I'm not having that much of a problem with it. We'll see you all next week.
The Bob Siegel Show is sponsored in part by the law offices of Matthew Simone.